Thank you so much, everybody, for joining us here at Queer at Heart. Today on the show, we have Matt Lancidel. And hey, Matt.
Hey, Mo.
How's it going? I'm really excited to have you on the show today.
I'm excited to be here. Looking forward to this.
Today, we are going to be talking about one of, you know, Matt and I's favorite, one of our favorite topics. Shame and the origin of shame is what we're going to get into. And we're also going to talk about your own shame, growing up with your own shame. So I'm going to introduce you now.
Okay.
Try and make this short so Matt can speak. Matt Lancidel is a transformative coach, intuitive podcast host, and author from Calgary, Alberta. Matt specializes in teaching people how to heal shame and embody their authentic self so they can enjoy meaningful connections in their lives. His area of expertise are working with gay men and people with emotional eating and food addiction leading to weight issues. Inspired to be authentic is a mission Matt has purposely created through this content and coaching. He offers inspiration to share more of your truth with the world. So tell me, when did this whole journey start for you? When you realized that, you know, it was time to dive in deeper and, you know, get on with your quest of feeling worthy of connection with the rest of the world, basically.
Oh, wow. You know, it's kind of come in chapters, to be honest. And I think my, when I was younger, I think I was about 5 years old when I had my first sexual feeling towards another guy. And that was a bit, essentially chapter one, you know, starting the journey of I'm different. I feel different. I'm not really aligned to what I see in the normative heterosexual male standard of what masculinity is and things like that. And that kind of brought me on a journey of self-abandonment and learning how to be everything that I wasn't to hide who I really was, because there was a lot of shame around that. And by the age of 11, I was using pot and alcohol and mushrooms. And by the age of 13, I was using ecstasy. And by the age of 16, I was using cocaine. And then by the age of 17, I was at the start of a full-blown crack addiction that lasted till I was 24 years old. And this was the preferred choice of repression and numbing myself was using substances. And throughout the course of that as well, I also developed a pretty heavy dependence on external validation. Mm-hmm. And that was for me was probably the hardest thing to break, because that was really what was keeping my glue, or the glue of my shame kind of binded to me, was external validation and not ever feeling worthy in myself, and learning how to find worthiness in my interactions with others or how others perceived me, things like that. So that whole kind of sequence of experiencing my shame but not knowing what it was tough for me. And then it wasn't until I read Brené Brown's work, actually, where I really started to understand what shame was and how it manifested in my life and how it expresses itself. And one of the biggest things for me is actually masculinity. I was really, I had a lot of distorted views on what masculinity was, and I wanted to move as far away from my femininity as possible and get closer and closer to people seeing me as ultra masculine, because it made me feel, it just made me feel less shame, I guess is what it was. And I ended up doing a lot of work around shame. And a lot of that was learning how to make peace with the things that I was rejecting about myself. But it happened in like such a long-term continuum. Like it wasn't just like I did shame work and then it was done. Like it's been a lifelong journey of learning how to embrace myself, learning how to be with who I am and in the entirety of who I am, not just the things I like about myself, but start learning how to lead with the things that I don't like about myself and learning how to embrace them. And so, yeah, vulnerability's been the my secret weapon to tackling the shame that I've experienced in my life.
So would you say the journey started like at 24? Would you say that was around the age it started, or?
So, yeah, I would say around 24 was, because that was when I got sober. Mm-hmm. And that's when I started to really experience things, because sobriety brings you to new people, new experiences, spirituality, self-awareness, all those things started to kind of happen at that time. And then I went on this journey of, you know, learning different things. Like I studied Peruvian shamanism and learning how to speak my truth was a big one. And so, yeah, I would say around 24 was kind of a fork in the road for me. It was really how I describe it. But it's something, I've been an empath since I was born, pretty much since I was a little kid. And it's something I've always understood things, but I was always so hyper anxious. And I was always concerned about other people and their opinion of me, because I could feel what other people were feeling. Mm. And that involved judgment. I can feel when other people are judging me. And when you're gay and you're different, you feel that. So you're picking up on it all the time. So it's very easy to internalize that as your inner voice. And then when everybody else's voice became my inner voice is when I got lost in myself.
And, it's interesting, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think part of my work has really been about discovering who I actually am and my inner voice and how that differentiates itself from other people's. It's been hard work for me, but it's coming along.
Yeah. I imagine. Yeah. I hear you when you say it's hard work. And good for you, because I see that you've been doing the work for a really long while. It's interesting though, you say that it's like when you're an empath, you start to feel what other people are thinking of you and saying and judging, whatever it is they're judging you. It's like you're seeing their thoughts and what they're feeling, and, you know, confusing that as your own voice and making that become a part of your narrative and making a mistake in thinking that is your voice. People will think that's crazy, right? People hear that, they're like, that's wild. Like, what do you mean? You're an empath. You can feel all these things. But you don't really know until you are that person feeling. You're like, no, this is actually happening. And the question I have for you is, so you identify as gay, right? So if you had to pick a label for yourself, it wouldn't be bisexual, it would be gay.
Correct, yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Because I know you're doing your coaching, you're doing your training. So did you go to, did you actually end up going into rehab and actually doing the program and all that?
I did, yeah. It was kind of a three-phase program. So the first 30 days was in inpatient. So phase two was out in the community, and then your family actually goes to the center for a weekend and learns how to kind of support you. And then phase three, you go back to rehab for 10 days or whatever it was, but I never ended up making it to phase three. I went to rehab when I was 18, and I got out of rehab and I started using right away. And then I just kind of dropped the frequency which I was using. I would make it 2-3 months without using, and then I would just drop $1,000 in one weekend and just go on a hardcore binge. And that happened for a long time, almost 4 years, where I was doing that. And the interesting thing too about it all is, and I had a lot of shame about this growing up, and I just started speaking public about it like a year ago, but I was using throughout my schooling. I was doing addiction counseling schooling at the University of Lethbridge, and then on the weekends I was getting all messed up and using. So, but it was part of my path, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
I needed to go through that, and I needed to heal. And my journey was, I was so wounded that the healing took a long time, right? You have to really undo a lot of this stuff that you experience when you're younger, and it takes time to make it happen. So
yeah, it does. It really does. So At what point, and you've been sober, for how long now?
From crack, I've been sober for 10 years. I just celebrated my 10 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that's pretty exciting. And then I would drink once in a while, not often, but I decided to stop drinking 2 years ago. So it's been 2 years this July, actually, since I've had any mind or mood altering substance. So, yeah. Mm.
Good for you, man. That's amazing. And like, and you, but you feel, you know, you feel the impact of it too, right?
Yeah, I feel really just, good.
Yeah. Just on the way you like, I don't know, like I took a drinking break. I don't drink very often. And so, but I remember a couple of years ago, I took a little bit of a drinking break and it felt great. And, you know, at the beginning you feel like, oh, you know, I'm, it's going to be difficult because you're going to feel the pressure of wanting to drink. And then eventually it just becomes this thing where, no, you know me as the person who doesn't drink.
Yeah.
So you got to get used to that. Yeah. So since we are talking about the origin of shame, what is it about yourself that, you know, I guess it's your struggles really, because you know you have this group that you've built, that you're building on Facebook called the Gay Men's Brotherhood. Mm-hmm. And what is your intention? What was your intention in building a group like that?
Okay, it's a long story.
Okay.
But I do want to share it though. Yeah, it's an important story because I hit a point actually, and it ties into drinking actually. I'll tell you that. So the drinking, not drinking has greatly affected my social life. And it was hard in the gay community to be sober because everybody, it's the social life in the gay community revolves around drinking, mm-hmm. and partying and sex and drugs and that sort of stuff. So it really started to, as I started to change this, I pulled back from the gay community because I didn't want to be around people that were intoxicated, at least to that point. Like my thing would be I would go out until midnight and then I'd head home because people start getting too handsy and whatnot around midnight.
So things change around midnight. It's about that time where things start to change.
Right? I know. That's the, I turn into a pumpkin. It's time to go home at that point. So, so anyways, I ended up about a year ago, I put out a video called Gay Men, Sex Addiction, and the Lack of True Connection in the Community. And that kind of changed my life, to be honest, because at that time I was doing fitness nutrition coaching, and I had very little interest to be part of the gay community, never mind work within it, because I was too triggered. I was triggered by other guys' unconscious shame. I was triggered by the hypersexuality, all this stuff. And I had a business coach at the time who was also kind of my life coach, and we had a really awesome session around validation and external validation, and how I felt very disconnected from the gay community. And she's like, honey, she's like, it's not anything that's wrong with you. She's like, it's something that's wrong with the system. Mm-hmm. That moment for me was a huge game changer. And I was like, wow, this is so true, because I'm looking for intimacy. Mm-hmm. Connection, sensuality, not necessarily sex, right? Different things. And I was shaming myself for wanting these things. And I didn't realize how much it was actually being desired for in the community until I put this video out. And so the video got released, and then I got probably over the course of a month after the video was released, I got about 100 emails from different people that had watched this video that were so touched by it because they felt like I was connecting to them. The video was very raw. It wasn't me coaching at all. It was me just expressing my frustration, my loneliness, my sadness around wanting these things from the community, but they're not there. And I wanted to create them and create a space for people to do this work. So I was really inspired after I released this video, but I knew I wasn't ready to start to create something to help, because I couldn't coach gay men because I was too triggered by their stuff because it was too close to mine. Mm. So I left for Asia. I moved to Thailand and Vietnam for about 8 months and did a bunch of work in this area, specifically around my gay shame and around the thing, like my loneliness and disconnection, and just healed a lot of this stuff. And then I came back and I just started tinkering and decided I wanted to create a group. And I called it the Gay Men's Brotherhood. And then I reached out to a few of my buddies who also do coaching with gay men. And they're actually out in Toronto as well. And they were on board, and they're like, this feels very aligned to me. And I'm like, great, this feels very aligned to me. So we started to kind of build this group together. And The rest is history. We're almost at 1,300 guys, and we're creating a really cool community of conscious gay men who want to move in the direction of personal development, who are yearning for connection and intimacy because they feel disconnected and lonely. And so that was really the birthplace of the group. And now the vision with the Brotherhood is to offer community, is essentially what it is. Offer conscious community where other gay men can come in and they can do the healing work, they can share, practice vulnerability, and do all the things that we know are really, really effective for healing shame, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's a great reason to have a group like that because it is definitely needed. I mean, it seems to be like one of those groups where, you know, it's if somebody's not feeling great and they need help, they go there and they're like, hey, dude, like I'm kind of spiraling, and somebody will come out and be like, hey, let's talk.
Yeah.
Let's figure this out. And that's really the safety that, you're creating here. And I think that's fantastic. And it's what we definitely need in our community is a group like that for people who really want to connect and start living, you know, their best, most authentic life. So, so you also, I think you wrote, I want to talk about, is it okay if we talk about the book?
Sure. Yeah.
You wrote a book. So we'll get to the book. The Origin of Shame. How is it, what was the very first time when you I guess it was recently when you were in Vietnam, what was it that you did to start recovering your own shame?
You know, and like I said, this shame work has been happening for probably at least since my sobriety. So it's been 10, almost 11 years now I've been doing this work, but I would say it's very, very specific to things like posting shirtless pictures, thirst traps, external validation, drugs and alcohol, hypersexuality, all those very concrete things that we use to reinforce our shame as gay men. Those are the things I hadn't made peace with yet. But as far as like, and I wrote this in my book that, you know, when we experience shame as gay men, we don't just experience it for being gay. When you experience shame, it's a whole being. My whole being feels shameful. So I had to really learn how to understand myself, that it's not just I'm ashamed about being gay, but I'm ashamed about how that shows up in my life because that's a part of me, right? So it's a very, so it was all about kind of learning how to practice vulnerability was the one of the biggest things that helped me through my shame, because like, you said this in our podcast interview when I interviewed you about, you know, shame thrives on three things: secrecy, silence, and judgment. And those are all the things that I was doing. So, you know, taking secrecy into sharing, right? Sharing is a big part of it. And then silence is about speaking your truth, because shame wants to tell you to be quiet, right? Keep it within, because you don't want to get judged for it. And then judgment, we're judging ourselves. Mm-hmm. So as soon as I started to give myself space to be who I am in all aspects of my being, I started to really step into my authenticity. And that's very new. That's within the last year. And I did a lot of this work in Asia. Mm-hmm.
And I remember I saw your journey. I was watching your journey.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. And a lot of the work that I did in Asia was shadow work. Mm-hmm. And shadow work is about really just exploring the things that we reject about ourselves, our splits, right? Shadows. That's why they call it shadows, that we split from them and they kind of just lurk in our energy. And if we're unconscious of our shadows and we reject them, they play out in very unconscious ways in our lives.
Yes.
We attract people who therefore resonate with that energy of that shadow. And then we're like, why am I attracting this person into my life?
Yeah.
So I did a lot of work I call befriending your shadow. And it's all about making peace and befriending these aspects of ourselves that we're so used to rejecting. But really, when you start to look at them as opportunities to grow and opportunities to connect with others, you start to look at them as they're kind of beautiful. Like, you know, when somebody triggers me, it's usually because they're a lot like me. So when I do shadow work and I make peace with these things that I don't like about myself, I learn to love those things. And then I learn to see them in others as things I love, because they're not an extension of something that I hate about myself. And then that relatability and creates connection. And then I'm open to these people that used to trigger me. They now are people that are, they're allies, because we share the same struggle. Mm-hmm. And that's how we can turn shame into connection, is by using vulnerability and befriending our shadows.
Yeah. Changing your perception of it, mm-hmm. you know, what that looks like. And also, so when I think of shadow work, I often think of Debbie Ford.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if you've heard of the book called The Dark Side of the Light Chasers.
No, I haven't. Sounds good though.
Yeah. So that's Debbie Ford. She does a lot of shadow work. That's amazing. So what is, I don't hear very many people doing that kind of work, to be honest. There's nobody ever brings up shadow work. So I'm really, actually, it's kind of awesome that you brought that up.
It's the most painful work I've ever done. I will speak to that. It was because it was so painful and I had to go so deep inside myself to retrieve it. It had the most profound impact on me.
I bet.
So it's like, I felt like I was trudging through the swamp. Like, just, it was so heavy. And when you get there, you're just like, wow, this is incredible, because you start to get to release this stuff. And I had these, some really cool, profound experiences in Asia where, my body took over my experience for me. And I started having these cathartic, like shaking or things like that when I was doing breath work around my shadows. And it's just really neat when you start to release this energy that has been so unconsciously attached to your shadows. It's you create so much space inside of your being to just be you. You know what I mean? And that's the most beautiful place to arrive to, is when you just get to be you and you don't have to worry about all the peripheral, right? People judging you, what others are going to think of me, all that stuff that we get so hung up on as human beings. You know?
Yeah, it's really it's so liberating. Like when you get to a point where you can actually peel back your thoughts and you can actually mingle like with them, you know, as separate from you, and just like sort of observe them and be curious. And so I think that's a very important work that people, it's weird, right? Because as I said the other day, like we're living inside ourselves. So we don't see ourselves as separate beings. So our thoughts are not, we don't look at it as separate. Like, so it's hard for people to look at it as this is the ego. This is the false part. This is what's, you know, kind of fucking us over.
Yeah.
So where is a good start for people? So where is a good place for people to start their healing journey, would you say? So like, you know, somebody gets really fed up with their life. And they're like, enough is enough. Something goes off in them. They want to start their healing journey. Would you say it's very beneficial for people to go away, to get a therapist, get a coach? What is the first step?
Going away doesn't solve anything unless you're willing to go away and travel within. I say, if you're going to travel abroad, make sure you're traveling within as well, because traveling abroad it gives you different experiences and different ways of looking at things, but it's not going to help with your inner psychology if you're not willing to explore it. Right. So just have an openness if you're going to travel. But I think one of the greatest things that we can offer ourselves is self-awareness, because when we're aware, there's very little to do and more to just allow, right? We're allowing the seed of awareness to be watered and to start to sprout. And then we grow this big, beautiful tree of who we are. And I think, so self-awareness is key. And however you want to get that, just provide it to yourself. So it might be journaling, it might be reading, it might be connecting with a coach or a therapist, however that might be. It start to externalize your inner process and start to see it outside yourself. That's huge, because otherwise we're just a bunch of thoughts that are bundled up and going around on a freaking merry-go-round, and we never get to see it play out because we're on the ride, right? When we talk with people and we start to write and things, we get off the ride and we watch the ride start. We watch the ride playing, it's playing out, and we get to see the children screaming and having fun and everything and all that, but we're the witness. And that's the seed of awareness. That's so therapeutic.
Being a witness to your life. Yeah. It changes everything, doesn't it? Like to actually just separate yourself. About shame here. Where does my neck? I had an important question I was going to ask you. So how do you know when, so we can say to somebody, you know, you can heal your shame, you can identify what your shame is and you can heal it. And for me, I've always known when I'm taking myself seriously. I've always known when I'm actually on a serious, like, healing journey, because you feel the effects of it. Number one, you feel exhilarated, you feel free and all these things, but also it's kind of scary to feel that way, because you know, it's only the beginning, and you know that, oh, you feel so good. You're like, oh, I'm on this path here and I'm healing. And, but really the journey is long, and it's about committing to yourself. Yeah. Right. Cause you said, it's difficult. It's like walking through a swamp, and like really just every day, just it's painful. And so, my question was, what is, how do you get people to commit to themselves, basically? Because it's hard to commit to yourself, and it's hard to get to a certain point where you're like, okay, I've achieved this. How do you, I find it's very hard to commit unless you have somebody pushing you to do it. That's me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, would you agree with that?
I would. I'm quite self-driven. A lot of the people that I work with in my coaching practice are people that want that external person to help motivate, help guide them on their journey and whatnot. So, and it was I never hired my first coach until I was 33, and I'm now 35. And it was such a cool experience for me, because I had never had that. I've been to therapy since I was a kid, but like, I've never actually had a coach like help me with my business and help me with structure and things like that. It was always just kind of talk therapy. And it was really nice to have that. But I would say when it comes to commitment, I would say you have to, it takes consistency. If you want to be truly committed and stay committed to something, you have to be consistent in reminding yourself of your why, your purpose. What's your fire in your belly? And, you know, I know that when I get burnt out or I feel fatigued, I feel like I've lost connection to my why and my purpose. And sometimes I have to, whether it's align myself to something where I'm going to feel connected, or maybe ask the universe to help me rediscover my purpose, whatever that might be. But you always need to remind yourself of your why. And one of the things that I get my clients to do when they're doing work where they need to interrupt a habitual pattern or like a self-limiting belief or something like that, is to just put an alarm in your phone. Mm-hmm. And every day, it could be even 3 times a day, where this thing pops up on your phone and it says, whatever, practice gratitude or a mantra or an affirmation or something. It pops up 3 times a day, and you start to create this as a habit, because that's really where we're going to get into the subconscious part of the brain, which is really where we tend to operate a lot of our stuff from, is the subconscious. Mm-hmm. So there's that. I would say probably the best tip that I could give as far as consistency.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I think that it's really magical work, because, like, you know, I didn't start journaling until maybe two and a half months ago. I don't really journal. And so but when I started doing something called writing out your language, knowing your language. Okay. It's about knowing how you speak to yourself in your brain. And it's about the mental, what you're telling yourself mentally and how you're feeling physically, and writing about that. And the magic of that is like, you just keep going deeper and deeper and deeper. It just happens. You just keep going deeper and deeper and deeper as you write.
Yeah.
But that's what gets it going, is the writing. And so that's been a big gift for me, because you were talking about writing. I think that's been one of the biggest tools that's really helped me get out of hell. And and you know, it took help from a coach. You know, it's from a coach. So they start to learn, you know, just to get really disciplined and start to write and show up for myself. So it's, I don't know, you probably agree, it really is about showing up for yourself continuously.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. And writing is very therapeutic for me too. Most of my catharsis has come through when I'm writing. I'll be in the middle of writing and it's cool because my writing, I share with others. So it's almost like I'm sharing my journaling with others, and I censor some of it because some of it, I don't want to be out there, because it's private to me and it involves people that maybe it's private to them as well. But, I do a lot of my posting and stuff on social media, is very raw and real writing that I write from things I'm struggling with.
At what age did you first realize, I'm gay? And, we know when you realized you were gay, but when did you realize I'm gay and there's shame regarding being gay? When you realized, this is actually not normal, and you started feeling really bad about it?
You know what's interesting is I was so young, and that makes me so sad. I just had like a wave of sadness because I'm like, you know what? Here I am, like 5 years old, and I have these sexual feelings for this person, and I'm having to shove it down or not and keep it a secret. And it's pretty painful to go from, you know, the age of 5 to the age of 18 with keeping this a secret.
Oh, that's a lot of years.
It's a lot of years, and some men go 50 years, and some people will never tell anybody and they'll die that way. And that brings up a lot of sadness for me because that's a big burden. That's a heavy load to carry throughout when you're that young. You know what I mean? So I knew when I was about 5 and I started to hide it right away because I didn't want to tell anybody. And
you realized at 5 years old. So you were 5 and you realized this is not everybody's like this at 5.
I would say I started to have maybe an energetic experience of this doesn't feel right. This isn't how other people are. So yeah, I would say yes, but it wasn't understood in a way that I was able to make sense of it, I don't think. And that's why it was such a struggle for me. I think what about the age of maybe 12, I would say, is when I started to really connect with that it's not something that it's okay. It's not okay. It's not acceptable by society. But I had a lot of sexual experiences with guys that I grew up with. I grew up in a friend circle of like, there was like 7 of us, and we were inseparable friends. And out of 7 of those guys, I had sexual experiences with 3 of them, or four of them actually. And
okay. This is when you were a teenager.
This was between the ages of like 8 and 12, maybe.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Yeah. And they weren't like hardcore sexual experiences, but they were like feeling and touching and playing around and stuff like that. And it's very common actually.
Nice.
for young boys to have this experience. And I think even at that point, I wasn't experiencing shame for it. I was kind of excited about it actually. And then, but then when I did get to the age of around 12 and I realized that this was something that society saw as disgusting, that's when I started to really shell up, and I kept it a secret. And that energy of being stored inside of me, that I'm disgusting, I'm not lovable, I'm this, I'm defective, that's what was the fuel to my addiction, right? That's where I started to really become heavily reliant on other people having to validate me, because internally I didn't feel worthy. So I needed other people to show that to me.
So essentially our shame, you know, comes, we can actually say that shame comes from the external, like doesn't come from the external. We accept it as shame and secrecy and silence. Yeah. But the more people we have in the world who understand us, the less likely we are to have that shame. Like if we were to grow up having family and people around us who understood it, I mean, yeah, it could really spare us, you know, the hardship of shame and rejection and not accepting ourselves and believing these, you know, these, all these different things.
Yeah.
So I want to get into your book. Is that okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So you wrote this book while you were in Asia.
I did. Yeah.
Right. And this has obviously been an aspiration of yours. You've wanted to write a book for a little while. Have you written another book?
No, I haven't. No, I've wanted to write a book since I was probably 15.
Okay. And the name of the book, sorry.
It's called Be the Space.
Be the Space. That's right. I remember the book you put it out when you were in Asia. Now, what can people expect in that book?
Okay, I'll share some cool tips about the book. And I actually haven't shared this with people yet. The whole book was written on my iPhone. I would write a bunch of stuff in my notes and then I would just email it to myself. So pretty much I would say at least 80 to 90% of the book was written on
That's awesome.
On my iPhone, which
while you're traveling.
Yeah. The cover of the book was a picture that I took just off of my tripod and then took it when I was in my apartment in Chiang Mai. And I self-published the book. So I didn't spend a dime. I didn't have to spend a single dollar to get the book from start to finish, which was pretty cool. But yeah, so the book is called Be the Space, and it's a loving guide to creating inner space through present moment awareness. So, and the tagline is the wisdom to overcome suffering. I have an extremely active mind. It doesn't like to ever be quiet. And it's been my nemesis for a lot of my life until I learned present moment awareness and how to start to play with my internal gaze and drawing my internal gaze down into my body and allowing my body to have the experience. And so that was a huge, huge thing for me. And I started writing the book as an ebook. It was going to be 40 pages and it was going to be an ebook. And I just started writing and I was just overtaken by this energy. And that was my first ever experience of connecting with a spirit guide where I was like, I would say probably half the book is me writing my ideas, my actual physical form, mental ideas. And then the other 50% of the book is channeled through a spirit guide. And basically, it was really, really neat. So the book is really all about how to stop living in the past, stop living in the future, and just live in the now where everything is. All the states that we want to experience, right? Joy, love, bliss, these things that aren't emotions. We can't cultivate them because of some experience that we have. They just are there and we need to tune into them. And we tune into them in stillness and in silence and in connecting to our inner body and that. So yeah, the book is essentially a memoir, like my whole life journey kind of from the age of 5 all the way up until the age of 34 is talked about in the book and used as a guide. So it's a guide that people can learn how to do and make the transformation that I made. But it's all about the stories of just kind of me talking about my journey through perfectionism, through shame, through growing up gay and those struggles.
It's amazing. And it's pretty practical. It's a practical book. It basically shows you how to do this.
Yeah.
You know, the direction you need to take to do this. I wasn't actually going to talk about your book because I realized in the middle of this interview, I was like, oh, wait a second. He has a book. We need to talk about that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome. That's amazing that you did it all on your iPhone. That's pretty cool while you're traveling. I mean, and you have a book out there. What are the next steps for you? What do you have up your sleeve?
Oh God, I'm a Gemini. I've always got a new idea, and my thing is to ground myself and root myself and follow through with the ideas that I have because I got ADD and I'm always like looking and my eyes are darting around to see the next funnest thing to draw my attention towards. So I've got Inspired to Be Authentic is my brand. Matt Lancetel Coaching is the parent company. And then Inspired to Be Authentic is the kind of how I deliver that content through that brand. And then now I've got the Gay Men's Brotherhood, which is collaborative and community oriented, which I want because I want something that I can be a part of. And I can take my coaching hat off and I can also be a part of it and be a human being. And so that's a big part of that. And then got my podcast, which is, you know, I love this. Like connecting with people is where I thrive. But I think what I'm wanting to do is actually branch out and do a bit more workshop, retreat, group style stuff. I love group work. I am a trained group therapist. So that's my background is in group and individual counseling. And so I love it. There's nothing better for me than to sit in a group and bridge connection and vulnerability and openness amongst people. It just feels so, it just makes me light up. So yeah, that's where I'm moving.
Good. Yeah. And I totally feel you on that. Like, you know, you get your fuel off of, you know, watching other people heal and watching other people get happier because, you know, it's possible.
Yeah.
Right. You know, you see somebody having an issue and you know that it's possible and you're so, you know, we're so driven. You're so driven to help people see that light and be like, hey, listen, man, like I've gone through this. Let's see if this can work for you. So I think the work you're doing is obviously very admirable, and it's a lot of hard work, you know, and people, you know, it's a commitment that we make to ourselves.
Yeah. Thank you for that recognition. It's, I know you're in the same space as me, and we put a lot of work and a lot of value into what we do, and we don't always get recognition for it. So I'm going to eat that up. Thank you.
Please eat it up. Like it's, and you know, the thing is, Matt, it's like, it's not even recent because, you know, we've been Facebook buddies for a little while, but we haven't really chatted all that much, but I've seen you do the work. You're actively doing the work. So anybody who chooses to go to Matt for their coaching or their way of finding direction, you know, you're in good hands because I've been seeing you do the work for like, you know, a little while now, a couple of years. So before we wrap this up, are there any last words you would like to say about shame? And what is it piece of advice you want to give to gay men who are struggling through this?
Just the phrase, Brené Brown's phrase, choose courage over comfort comes up for me. And I think I'm an anxious person. I have an anxious personality type, and I've struggled with social anxiety most of my life. And I live by the mantra, feel the fear and do it anyways, because courage is not fearlessness. Okay. Courage is I feel my fear and I choose to walk through the fire anyways. Fearlessness is very rare. It's very rare. It's very rare for someone to say, I'm fearless, I don't have fear, because it's usually just your courage outweighs your fear and you're choosing that. So I would say to gay men who are struggling, wherever you're at on the continuum, honor your pace, honor where you're at. If you're in the closet, honor that. Be there, but don't be afraid to take the next step to get closer and closer to your authenticity, because when we're authentic, we're living in alignment, and when we're in alignment, we're living authentically. They're hand in hand. We can't have one without the other. And so the closer you can get to living the person you are when no one's around, that's really what we're all working towards, right? Because it's like when I'm at home by myself, I'm this person. Okay. And when I go out and I'm around other people, I hold back certain aspects of myself because I don't want to be judged. I don't want to look weird. I don't want to be this. I don't want to be that. So the closer you can get to surrounding yourself with people who will accept you and appreciate you for who you are, that is a beautiful connection. And I would say really nurture those connections because they're going to help you get closer to being your authentic self.
Yeah. And thanks for saying that. And, you know, and it's funny thing is it doesn't mean that you're not going to be distracted either in the process, you know, and you know, you will be distracted. This is a process where you will be distracted, and you got to choose whether you're going to go with the distractions or you're going to go on the path that's going to help you and heal you.
Yeah.
And sometimes that means shutting down the world, you know, shutting down old habits, old friends, old things you used to do with those friends. And it's scary. It's really scary for a lot of people to let go of things and people because you think that maybe you're never going to make, you know, a greater connection, but it's just automatic. I mean, it's just almost like a promised gift from the universe. You get better and your connections get better. So,
yeah. Yeah. That's the beauty of alignment, man. I love it. And I'm at a place in my life now where I'm so aligned that I don't chase and I don't control as much as I used to. And I respond. So the universe presents me something and I choose to respond to it. And the more aligned I am, the more likely I am to say yes. But sometimes I practice free will and I'm like, this doesn't feel aligned to me where I'm at. And I have the courage to say no as well. And I think that's a big part of my process right now is learning to say no and learning to set boundaries with people. Because if they're not aligned to me, I don't want to be around people that I'm not aligned to. And that's not a disrespect thing. I'm respecting myself and honoring what's right and what's true for me.
Yeah. What is okay and what is not okay with you. And you know, there's people who will stay there and stick with you, and people who will leave. And exactly. You know, those people who believe in boundaries and this journey will stick with you. Yeah. And they'll be there for you.
Exactly.
Yeah. Before we get going, before we finish, cap this up, I want to talk again about, okay, so you have the Gay Men's Brotherhood, which is a group that Matt has for, conscious men, gay men to connect.
Yeah.
And also you have social media. So where do people find you?
I have for my business stuff, so it's Inspired to Be Authentic. I have a Facebook page and an Instagram page. My website is myname.com, so mattlancidell.com. My podcast is on all the channels at Inspired to Be Authentic. Mm-hmm. But yeah, everything's on my website too. If you just go to mattlancidell.com, I have all my social links. I have my podcast link, courses, books, all that stuff is all on there. So
for anybody who forgets what Matt just said, you just go to his website. Okay. So it's Matt Lanziedel. It's LANDSIEDEL.com. Because that's a difficult last name.
Oh man. Trust me.
I mean, I would not know how to spell that if you told me Lanziedel, and I'd be like, how do you spell that?
Yeah.
But, it's a really nice name. So, thank you so much for being here on the show and, talking to us about a little bit about your journey, actually, because you've had a really long journey, and I'm sure we could stay for a few hours talking about your journey.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to say is what did you get? The last thing I want to ask you, what is the most valuable thing you got out of traveling to Asia and living there for, I guess, 6 months?
Yeah, I would say I learned to my spirit guide connection.
Okay.
Yeah, I learned that while I was over there. The energy is a lot different there. Here in North America, it's do, very masculine. Mm-hmm. Everything is about active, right? Whereas Asia, Southeast Asia specifically, is very passive, and the energy is very receptive and receiving and being versus doing. And I had to slow down in order to feel these subtle energies that my guides were speaking to me through. And that I have an intuitive ability called clairsentience, which is essentially being able to tune into feeling. I can feel what other people are feeling, but I can make sense of it. And my guides speak to me through the same mechanism inside of me, energetic mechanism, that I can feel of other people. So it's like I'm connected to the spiritual world as well as the material world through this mechanism. And I learned how to really, really precisely hone it while I was in Asia, because I needed to slow down in order to develop it. And that doesn't make me special. Everybody has these abilities. It depends on how they express themselves in you, but you need to slow down. You need to pause in stillness to be able to connect with them. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people, especially people in North America, they don't know how to slow down. They need to practice it. So that's what my book is about.
Yeah.
My book is all, it teaches you how to do exactly that. So it's pretty cool.
Well, that is pretty cool. The reason I ask is because, you know, so many people do travel and they're like, oh, like they, you know, when I was in Asia and they're like, what happened? Like, you know, did you change or how did you become? I was like, you know, nothing really changed. I just had more experiences.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't become this new person. You just become maybe a better person because you have more experience. A version of yourself, sorry. And because you had that experience. So I'm really glad you had that experience because you got a book out of it that you wrote on your iPhone.
Yeah,
exactly. Anyhow, thank you so much, Matt, for being on the show. For everybody tuning in, thank you so much for being here. And also, for any questions or suggestions or comments, please contact me at queerheartpodcast@gmail.com. And I can't wait to see you all on the next episode. Ciao.